are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. Welcome, everyone. Today, we will cover the effects of large pituitary tumors on people's vision. Vision problems can occur when pituitary tumors grow towards the optic chiasm. And to discuss this subject, today I'm thrilled to introduce Dr. Victor Santo. Dr. Santo is a renowned, highly experienced ophthalmologist. His practice spans over 20 years of private practice. Dr. Santo is also an avid athlete, cycler, swimmer, expert skier, back mountain hiker, and an overall outdoor enthusiast. It is probably safe to say that anything you can do outside, he thoroughly enjoys. Welcome to our podcast, Dr. Santo. Thank you so much for agreeing to share your thoughts and experiences with our audience.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. So why don't we start by you telling me a little bit about your medical background and experience as an ophthalmologist.
Thank you, Jorge. I did my pre-med at Stanford University, my medical school in Philadelphia, a school called Hahnemann, and my specialty training in ophthalmology at Ochsner Hospital in New Orleans, and some externship training at UC San Francisco.
So what made you decide in ophthalmology?
Ophthalmology was very interesting. I originally went to medical school and to the study of medicine for the purpose of learning cardiology. And while I was leaving the campus one day, I saw on the corner of my eye a television set in a classroom showing something very odd. It looked like a full-blown eyeball taking up the entire screen. And when I walked into the classroom, I was fascinated to learn that this doctor, who was showing a cataract surgery at the time, showed that a patient that was legally blind one day could see 20/20 the next day. And I was fascinated by that. There was no turning back.
I bet. That's a great story. So because this is a pituitary website, and our patients are so interested in that, I remember in one of our conversations, you telling me a fascinating story about your experience with an acromegalic patient that happened very early in your career. Can you share that story with us?
You're exactly right, Jorge. That was one of the most fascinating experiences of my medical career. What happened on one day early in my career is a gentleman walked in, and he seemed a little taller than usual, a little more muscular than usual. But what really set him apart was when I sat him down for my examination, we generally put the head and face of our patient in a apparatus called a slit lamp, which is just a fancy ophthalmic microscope. And his features were so large that there was no position that I could set my slit lamp. The largest position of that slit lamp still could not accommodate the physicality of this patient. And I knew right then and there something was odd. And in conjunction with his complaints, which was basically and very simply blurred vision, we rapidly moved to a diagnosis that really we don't think about that much when a patient comes in with blurred vision. But we do think about, why was this patient the first patient of my career that couldn't fit in the slit lamp?
So was it the wideness of his face, or the fact that his eyes were more separated than usual?
His head was very, very large, and his physical features were gigantic, and everything was proportionate to a degree, except much, much larger. He had some very prominent brows, which is another sign of acromegaly. But besides that, he almost got away with it. Had we not done the slit lamp, there's probably a reasonable chance that we would have missed the early diagnosis.
That's so interesting, because so many people get missed for so many years, as you know. So I assume that as a frontline physician, ophthalmologist, you see a lot of people with common symptoms that can be attributable to many diseases. So other than the acromegaly experience that you just talked about, were there any other cases where you suspected a pituitary tumor, particularly as it related to visual fields deficits or any other issue with the vision?
That's a very, very interesting question, Jorge. As you can imagine, what generally brings a patient to see me is a simple symptom, blurred vision. And from that, you can open up a corridor to so many different types of diagnoses. However, there are some clues, especially with pituitary-type tumors, especially the type of pituitary tumors that grow in size. As you and your audience may be aware, pituitary tumors can show themselves in a couple of fundamental ways. It can come in two basic problem pathways. Number one, you can have a pituitary tumor that physically grows in size, and as it grows in size, it can cause compression of the delicate tissues around it, most notably the optic chiasm and the loss of visual field because of the optic chiasm compression. But also, a pituitary tumor can follow an entirely different pathway. It doesn't have to grow big, but it can start secreting hormones at levels that are not consistent with human health. So, for example, one hormone is called ACTH, and that causes the adrenal gland to start pumping out a lot of cortisol. When a person has elevated cortisol, among all the other symptoms they can have, one particularly is a symptom of blurred vision due to the diabetes that the Cushing's disease that is caused by the elevated cortisol can occur. And so you have blurred vision in the second pathway by virtue of the blood sugar, but not from a physical size of the tumor. So pituitary tumors can cause problems by either the size or the hormones that they secrete.
Right.
Now, getting back to the size of the tumor, the pituitary gland is located in a very, very important part of the brain, kind of centrally, maybe a little anteriorly, but most importantly for the ophthalmologists, it's located right next to the optic chiasm. The optic chiasm is a conduit from the eyeball to the back of the brain. It's basically the pipeline that takes visual information and brings it back. What happens with the optic chiasm is that even though it courses through the middle of the brain, it actually is giving information about the side vision or peripheral vision, or lateral vision. Those are three ways of calling the outside of your vision. And one of the classic responses to a growing pituitary tumor is compression of the optic chiasm. And thus, as the tumor physically grows, it causes compression of the optic chiasm, and patients tend to lose, let's just say, their side vision. That's probably the easiest way of understanding it. And that's the side vision on both eyes. So when they come in with blurred vision, we can do a couple of very quick physical tests without getting too fancy and see if we're in the ballpark of maybe that's the cause of what they would describe as blurred vision.
So that's really interesting. I'm a patient, as you know, and become very interested in pituitary problems. This is called, unless I make a mistake, it's called bitemporal visual field loss. Right?
Yeah, and more specifically, it's called a bitemporal hemianopsia. That's the medical term for what we just described. And there's much more detailed tests. We can do what they call a visual field test, which is a very quick and easy test that's done in the office. And it can be quite dramatic in someone with a pituitary tumor.
What we hear sometimes anecdotally from our patients is that many people are unaware they have any significant visual loss. And it leads to problems like they start bumping into cabinets or doorways, or they run into things when they're driving. And it's just because I think you mentioned once to me, the change is so gradual. So that you wouldn't recognize the abnormality. Is there anything that you look at when somebody comes in that you notice? Can you notice that if a patient doesn't tell you that they have a bitemporal visual issue? Or
the side vision.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right in your premise there, that when we see a patient with blurred vision, we also have to do the dance that says, did this suddenly happen? Or did this patient suddenly notice that this happened?
Yeah,
something that might have been going on for a long, long time. And the good news about ophthalmology is that a lot of what we see doesn't hide from you. We go through a very, very fundamental examination with each patient, and that includes some neurologic features just in the physical examination that helps you get closer and closer to what might be the cause of this blurred vision. So we often find the visual field abnormality early on, and the classic nature of a pituitary tumor would, of course, point in that direction.
This is really so interesting what you're saying. So one of the key issues, as you mentioned, is obviously visual loss, of many different types. I'm assuming this can be gradual and sometimes barely noticeable by patients, as we just discussed. Can you discuss how pituitary tumors can affect the visual pathways and what may be some of those early signs?
Excellent, Jorge. We talked a moment ago about the physical size of a tumor and the encroachment on the optic chiasm. That's one type of visual loss, and it's a physical way of losing vision. You push on nerves, they stop functioning well, you lose your side vision, time goes on, and you lose more and more vision, and somewhere along the way, you usually find your way to an ophthalmologist. That's one way of visual pathway loss. The other thing that happens with pituitary is, of course, it secretes hormones. One hormone, the ACTH, the adrenocorticotropic hormone, is one which, if it's out of whack, can cause increased cortisol production from the adrenal glands. And when that happens, you get a constellation of findings, but very often you're going to find a patient that's developing high blood sugar. High blood sugar can cause blurred vision very, very early on in the process, especially if it's sudden in nature. People who gradually develop blood sugar problems, for example, may not notice a visual loss. But when the blood sugar gets elevated quickly, that can bring a patient in with the symptom of blurred vision. So the pituitary gland can offer other ways of vision loss, and the blurred vision associated that can take on a different makeup. That is, those losses that are caused by hormone changes.
Yeah. Okay. So when you have you would also do a test, a retina test, to see if there's a bleeding in the back of the that was caused by diabetes, or
That would, again, Jorge, that would be very late in the process. Early onset diabetes generally doesn't cause that, and the early onset of blood sugar changes can cause the lens within the eye to undergo changes and cause blurred vision.
Got it.
Just on that level.
Yeah. So I understand that the cranial nerves that control eye movement can severely be affected by pituitary tumors, like you said, invading the cavernous sinus, and especially with apoplexy, or I guess bleeding, which is apoplexy, most commonly caused by oculomotor nerve palsy. Can you explain what that is and what that might look like? And maybe we could start with what is the oculomotor nerves and what it does.
Sure. The oculomotor nerve is one of the cranial nerves. It happens to be what we would call the third nerve, or the oculomotor nerve, and that is responsible for several eye movement functions. It moves the eye inward, up, down. It's also responsible for the eyelid. So if you have a problem with the third nerve, any one or all of the following can happen. You can lose your ability to turn the eye effectively, so that gives you the feeling of double vision. You can have a droopy eyelid, which of course is often very noticeable. And notably, there are what we call the pupillary fibers that course with the oculomotor nerve. And the nerve itself doesn't have the pupillary fibers, but they do course around the periphery or the outside of the nerve. So if there is a problem, let's just say, with the nerve itself, the pupil is likely to function well. But if there's a problem to the pupillary fibers and the nerve, you might think that there's some compression from the outside. So we do additional tests, not simply to see if the eye is moving properly, but to see if the pupil is functioning properly. And you've seen in emergency settings, doctors run to the patient and shine a flashlight in their eye. That's to do a test called the afferent pupillary defect test to determine if the pupil is functioning properly. It's a little hard on a radio or a podcast platform to describe how the procedure works, but suffice to say that if the eye movement issue is due to, let's just say, diabetes, very often the pupillary fibers are fine because they're on the outside. If you have pupillary abnormality and the third nerve is having a problem, you have to start to think about what's causing that compression. And one of the quickest ways of causing compression to the nerve and the fibers around that nerve is bleeding in the brain. And that's very important to understand, because the brain is trapped inside of a box called the skull. And when things start to bleed, when the brain starts to bleed, you'll see that it doesn't have any place to go. And it tends to compress everything around it, and the oculomotor nerve and the pupillary fibers are often succumb to that additional pressure from bleeding.
So this is really interesting. So if you see a patient with a droopy eyelid, would you immediately consider that there's something that is infringing on the oculomotor nerve? And either bleeding or a tumor or something like that?
That's a very appropriate question, Jorge. I think it starts with looking at your patient. If it's a young child that's 3 years old and you see all the early birth photos and the lid is droopy, you're pretty much going to be sure that it's not some dramatic brain problem or bleeding. If you see someone, conversely, that's 80 years old and both eyelids are droopy, you're going to think of some other issue besides jumping onto the notion that this person has a brain tumor or bleeding in the brain. However, you meet somebody between those two ages and they say, you know, doc, this lid has gotten droopy over the last week and I'm getting some headaches. Or the general feeling that they get is that the tempo is speeding up, you got to jump all over that.
One of the key signs that there may be a large pituitary tumor, as we talked about already, it's called bitemporal hemianopsia. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Great. So can you explain a little bit what this is and how it affects someone's vision?
Sure. basically, the way the anatomy of the eye works, you have the eyeball, and then the visual information goes through, let's just say, a pipe towards the back of the brain. That pipe is really a nerve. You have nerves that actually cross through the middle of the brain and very, very close to the pituitary gland. And those ones that cross through the middle actually are carrying information from the side vision or the peripheral vision of each eye. Even though they're going through the middle, they get the visual pathway information from the outside vision. When the pituitary grows physically in size, it has a chance of compressing against that set of nerves that crosses through the brain. That nerve area is called the optic chiasm. And as the pituitary tumor grows and impinges on the optic chiasm, you have patients that start to lose their peripheral vision, that is their side vision in each eye. And as the tumor grows, it gets worse and worse and worse.
This has been unbelievably helpful, and I'm sure it's going to be of great interest to our audience. But as you know, one of the things that we, our stated objective at Pituitary World News is that we want to make sure, we want to somehow decrease the amount of time that it takes for people to get diagnosed. People go decades misdiagnosed or jumping from doctor to doctor, not just primary care physicians, but also healthcare practitioners that don't recognize the signs or at least don't put it in the list of possibilities. In your opinion, what do you think could be done to make sure that more frontline healthcare workers or primary care docs are more aware of pituitary disorders and consider it more on the list of possibilities when they see patients, just as you did in your practice?
And I think it's you hit it right there. I think it really hinges on going old school, looking at your patient and performing a complete physical exam. You know, we live in an era, I should say, that we can look at our smartphone, somebody says something, we look up that symptom, and then we can come up with a list of causes. But when we look at the patient, examine the patient, listen to the patient, and perform a complete exam, you will get a wealth of information and you could rapidly hone in on the areas that need to be observed more closely. So in closing, it really is the doctor paying attention to the patient. It may sound silly, but as we move into an era where all the information is at our fingertips, we tend to not look up from our smartphones anymore. And that's exactly what should be done.
Great. Well, Dr. Santo, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your extremely busy day to do this. So anyway, thank you. And I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did.
I did. And Jorge, it's such a pleasure to spend time with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.